Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you guys once again for joining the 990s podcast hosted by yours truly, Kevin Thompson, founder and CEO of 990 Capital Group. Thank you guys for joining us. As I always say, subscribe to the channel. As I always say, go and get my book, MLB to CFP Live on Apple and Amazon. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at info@990capitalgroup.com. Send us your questions. Go to the website at www.990capitalgroup.com. Schedule your appointment. As you know, we're here to do what? Educate, empower, and engage, and also entertain. And today, got a special guest for you, Andy Ponko, Tenon Financial. We're talking infinite banking, and is it a fool's game? I wanted to get an expert opinion. Andy, welcome to the show. Let's get it. Welcome to the show, Andy Ponko. Hey, you know what? He's my twin because he has the CFP, the RICP, and the EA. He wants to be just like Kevin Thompson. No, I'm just kidding with you.
How could I not?
The show, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Looking forward to this. And man, great to see someone else with the same set of letters after their name.
Oh, man. And you know how hard it was. I mean, it's, again, we do things because we want to get educated. And this is what it's about. This is not a debate. This is not an argument. This is all about education. And people don't know this about Andy. He loves IULs. He lives IULs. No, I'm just kidding. By the way.
I eat him for breakfast.
Yeah, he eats him for breakfast, man.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, if you don't know Andy, he's always on social media, all on LinkedIn, combating the industry regarding the sales tactics in IULs, not the actual IUL itself, but the tactics and way it's sold. He does a very, very good job. And I commend you for what you bring to the table, man. It's just phenomenal. And thank you for what you bring and the education that you give the audience.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Not everyone has as positive of wording around my commentary about IUL sales practices as you do just now, but thank you for that.
You and I both know it's the industry, man. There's people, you have your commission guys, you have your fee-only guys, you have all these guys in between, and it's our way is the right way, and everybody wants to fight about it, but that's not what we're here to talk about today. Right. We're here to talk about this conundrum that I've come across, and I'm sure you've come across it as well, this infinite banking and how it actually works. So we want to take a little deep dive because I know you have a vast wealth of knowledge in this area, because I'll start here. So on the 90s podcast, we're here to educate. And my understanding is that infinite banking is where you take a permanent life insurance policy. And again, normally, I've read it's a lot of it's whole life insurance. I don't know which, if it's whole life, IUL, VUL, LUL, or LL Cool J. Who knows what the hell it is? But at the end of the day, you take this permanent life insurance policy and you want to become your own banker. And you borrow against that policy using the cash values that have been built inside the policy to put into other assets, theoretically removing your need for a bank. Do I have that kind of in a nutshell, like what the idea around it is?
At a super high level, yes. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll be sure to bring this up because I think it's worth reading for anyone who claims to want to know about infinite banking.
Yeah.
The godfather of the term and the usage is Nelson Nash.
Nelson Nash.
And you hit the nail on the head so far, but he specifically says it should be whole life. Okay. Not any of the ULs, not LLUL, you know, ladies love universal life, none of that. And there's a comment I just want to share in the book.
Yeah.
Briefly about, now this book predates indexed universal life. So there's only traditional UL and then VUL. But my guess is if you were to write it now, the gist would be the same. He says, in comment to could universal policies be used? He says, no. He regards EFL and creating the first universal anyway. It says it was an attempt to unbundle the savings element and the life insurance element of a whole life policy, something that can't be done if one understands the concept of whole life insurance.
Gotcha.
So confident in saying traditional concepts of infinite banking would only be using whole life, not any of the universal products.
Okay. So let's just stick with the whole life insurance then, because you and I both know we've seen it. You've seen, I know you've done your little research. You've done your research, not little research. You've done your research on the group, I don't want to name names, but the group that's doing the jigs on social media, and we know what they're using. We know what they're using about what they're trying to sell. So let's just stick with the whole life. Okay. So
got it.
The purpose is I'm trying to remove my relationship with the actual banking industry, and I'm going to be my own bank. Okay. So now I'm going to be able to borrow from this policy that has cash value to fund other operations. So that's high level, right? Whole life insurance.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, here's my question. Being your own bank, this is question number one. Are we not effectively removing the banking relationship and now making the bank the insurance company? Because you're paying interest on the loan back to the insurance company versus back to the bank. Am I confused on that? Can you help me out with that?
That's where I start to lose, I don't want to say respect, but people who call it a bank, be your own bank, that's a bit of a sleight of hand misnomer. To your point, you're not borrowing money from yourself. To be clear, you are borrowing money from the insurance company. They're making you a personal loan. Mm-hmm. You're paying interest to them. Your loan is collateralized, or the loan is collateralized by the amount of cash value you have in the policy. So in that sense, think about it loosely from this perspective. When you take a home equity loan against your house, you still own the underlying asset. You own the house. Mm-hmm. You're just borrowing against it. You're taking a loan from a bank who's lending you money. If you default, they come after your house.
Yes.
It's the same thing conceptually with borrowing into life insurance policy. You own the policy. That's your asset. It's still going up or down in value, whatever it's doing. You're separately taking a loan, in this case from an insurance company, collateralized by that policy. So you're not banking on yourself any more than you're banking on a bank who's lending you money. Where the bank on yourself thing comes from, and this kind of, you got to pick through the words, but in the book, what he's getting at is, and I don't agree with this view, is that when you buy a whole life policy from a mutual company, he specifically says mutual company, obviously, you are in effect a policy holder. Oh, I'm sorry, you are a stakeholder, a shareholder in the insurance company. And so everything they do, all the economics they get, it's indirectly you, because you're an owner of that company. So he's saying, even though, yes, the insurance company is the one lending you the money, you are in effect the insurance company as a mutual policy holder, hence that you're banking on yourself. And that, I think, is a stretch. Like, what if you own shares of Bank of America and you get a Bank of America mortgage? Are you saying you're banking on yourself because you're a shareholder in Bank of America? No, like, that's just stupid to think about it that way. But in this context, like, he tries to make an argument for it. So.
Well, you're telling me that I can't have a Bank of America account, and or I can't own shares of Bank of America and then get a loan from Bank of America and then basically give myself that same loan? Is that what you're trying to say? Does it work that way?
I'm saying it doesn't work that way. The book is trying to make it out as if it's that way, as if it's yourself, because you're a policyholder in a mutual company. It's like that's a stretch to do that. So
it's a stretch, my friend. So that's the reason why I asked you the question, because my man Andy Ponko knows these types of things, and this is what he does, man. Like, he reads a lot, he educates us. And here's my second thing I have with this infinite banking conundrum. So people really believe that if you put a dollar in a whole life insurance policy today, you can borrow 95% of that policy money in year one, year two, year three. But they don't understand the complexities on how the policy works, because that amount of money is not available in year one or year two or year three, unless you absolutely overfund the policy to the point where you're up to the neck, where you have money to borrow. So that's one thing that people don't understand. It takes 5, 6, 7 years for you to actually have money to say, okay, I'm ready to borrow against it. Am I correct on that?
Yes and no. I think you said it both ways. For people that do max fund it up to the limit where it's not yet a modified endowment contract, yes, all else equal, there's much more of your money available to be borrowed against early on, versus if you just put in the bare minimum that's required to keep the policy afloat for the rest of your life, the amount you can borrow against will be substantially lower in the early years. So so that really does depend. I mean, I don't know if there's anything that's 100% borrowing capacity right off the bat, but depending on the policy and whatever, I want to believe there's some that could be 90%+, in the early years you can borrow on, but that's all going to be policy specific. And to be fair, I'm in no way saying borrowing against life insurance is a bad idea or that there's not merits to it. Like, that's not what this is about at all. I think you sort of brought this up with my views about IUL. It's just how it's bastardized and misrepresented and basically sold by some people to everyone as the panacea to all things financial. That's where things could, people can end up getting in trouble. But there's no doubt merit to having an asset like a cash value life insurance policy to borrow against. For various reasons. The interest rates are lower than borrowing against like a margin account in a brokerage world where you're paying 11, 12% interest now. Borrowing rates against a whole life policy are probably 5, maybe 6, I don't know. So
Depending on the
it's
year you
a, you
bought it,
know.
yeah.
So there's that. And it is a more stable asset base. A cash value in a whole life policy isn't going to whip around like someone who has a brokerage account full of Tesla and Nvidia stock or something. So there's something to it. It's so tweaked and twisted just for the sake of people making sales in many cases. And that's what I take issue with.
Full disclosure, I have four life insurance policies on my per well, four whole life insurance policies on my unsaid person. And they're doing quite well. I mean, the term that I hate to hear, properly structured whole life insurance policy. Yeah, as an agent, we always want to properly structure our policies. So maybe it's a 50-50 blend of PUAs and base policy costs, and we just fund them to have that cash value in there. But yeah, I believe in it. But one thing I'll say is this: being coming from a mutual carrier, the Kool-Aid in those places, in the when you go to the conventions and all the other stuff, is astronomical. I don't blame the agents who sell the products. I more blame the GAs and the insurance companies for not educating their base well enough to have firm conversations on the actualities of how the policy interacts with just everyday people. For example, I have a buddy. He's been in the business for almost over a decade, and we just found out something about the policy. Like, oh my God, did you know that if you made a policy paid up in year 15, this happens to it, or this happens to your commissions and all this other stuff. It's all this stuff behind the scenes that no one will ever understand, and you will only understand it when it happens. Not you can't teach it. It's just when it happens. Like, oh, I didn't realize that was going to happen. So it's one of those industries that is fraught with that. But so I guess my question is, with infinite banking, what would you say when someone borrows against the policy? How does the interest crediting, and I know this may be difficult because it's different in all insurance companies, but people don't understand how the insurance crediting or the interest crediting works when once you start taking that loan. It's not the same unless you're direct recognition or non-direct recognition. Can you walk us through that a little bit? Or am I too over the top there? Is that too over the table? Am I
How to
over the
interest
top?
crediting.
So for example, I'll say this. I did an illustration on my policy. I said, here's one with a $10,000 loan that I repaid 6 months later, and here's one without the $10,000 loan that I and wh what happens to the policy moving forward? Well, the one with the $10,000 loan has lower cash value in the future, right? So it's the same concept of when I do infinite banking, when I take a loan, like that loan needs to be repaid, right?
Right,
If you
yeah,
don't
got
repay
it.
it, what happens to the policy?
The infinite banking, as espoused by the godfather of it, says you have to repay all loans. And this is again where I think that the wording and labeling of banking, bank on yourself, be your own banker, gets so beaten up and twisted and misused. I see people who sell it say you never pay it back, just constantly take loans, turn around, pump that money back into the policy or other assets that might grow. But now it's very clear multiple times over in the book that you have to pay it back. Furthermore, this is what a lot of people I think don't know either. If let's say you can get an auto loan at 10%, I'm just making that up, and you have a whole life policy you can borrow against at 5%, you would obviously want to borrow all else equal against the policy at 5%. But in order to infinite bank as put forth by Nash, you should pay back as if you borrowed at 10%. So even though your actual interest is only 5 from borrowing against this policy, pay it back at whatever other cost of interest you would have had had you not used the policy, in this case, 10%. So he really doubles down hard on you want to keep just pumping money into this thing, right? So the extra phantom interest you're paying, again, 10% on an auto loan, 5% on your policy, is just you putting more money in the policy to help it grow, to have a larger base to borrow against in the future. So, I mean, I don't know that that's good or bad necessarily, but I think a lot of people who buy this aren't committed or aren't aware that that's what you're supposed to do to really make this thing tick, as the founder of Infinite Banking said you should.
Yeah, and I find it concerning because you often hear that with IULs, like, oh, you can just take money out, and at 65, we can take money out, and then we can start funding our lifestyle. Well, the cost of insurance at 65 is absolutely outrageous. Now, whole life insurance is different, of course, but I don't want to kind of confuse anything. But I think that's a misnomer in the industry that people can just take loans and not pay them back. The policy has to be in a significant maturity phase where there's a bunch of cash, a bunch of interest crediting, there's compounding, all that other stuff. Yeah, that's fine. But in the first 5 to 7 to 10 years, that ain't happening, my friend. So I'm on the side of the fence right there with you. So who would you say Infinite Banking is suited for? Like, what if I'm an individual, like you just mentioned, I can borrow against my policy at 5% versus in prevailing rates of 10%, but then pay it back. Like, who is perfectly suited for this type of strategy?
Not Infinite Banking specific, but the idea of having a permanent form of life insurance, be it whole life or one of the universal flavors, not just as a means of actually having a life insurance benefit if you die, but something to tap if and when needed as a buffer asset, a volatility shield, or whatever you want to call it, I think generally speaking should only be sold to people who are higher net worth or income, higher level of understanding and sophistication about financial products and things that make them tick. People who are more likely to be willing and able to use this product as it needs to be used, to manage it as it needs to be managed, to fund it as it needs to be funded, including if things go a little sideways down the road, especially like a universal policy where there's more flexibility and variability. Who should not use it is, you go on TikTok and there's some dude I just saw the other day, he had a guns blazing, he had a tank top on and said "banks suck" across it, pitching it to anyone who's going to listen as the strategy they should get. That's asking for trouble. People who are middle to lower income, don't have the means, don't have the understanding of this, they're going to buy this thing on this flashy, glossy kind of pipe dream of an illustration and story they were sold. Fast forward, because they lose a job, because they lose interest, because they lose motivation and dedication to fund it, whatever, you know, this thing could go sour and blow up. In worst case, they walk away with nothing, not even a death benefit, you know, if they don't die from this policy. Now, that's an extreme scenario, but I think there will be a lot of those scenarios. So, long way of saying, you know, if you've kind of, you don't necessarily have to have exhausted your traditional investable accounts, like, you know, 401ks to the max, or putting away a certain amount in a non-qualified brokerage, but you need to have the financial capacity, the financial knowledge to really understand, to be fully committed. This is a lifetime arrangement you're getting into. This isn't a 2-year thing and tap out and I'm done. Those things have to be in place. And now it's hard to say who exactly checks those boxes, who doesn't, but I can tell from a lot of these pitches that you're speaking to people who do not check these boxes.
Well, here's my question. So let's just say I have $100,000, right? $100,000. I can start a whole life insurance policy. Underwriting and all the other stuff aside, I can start a whole life insurance policy and fund it, or I could just literally go to a bank and say, here's my $100,000. I want to borrow against that $100,000 at whatever the prevailing rates are at this current time. Now, I still have my $100,000 at the bank, but now they're going to give me $100,000 for a loan versus having to put that $100,000 in a life insurance policy and probably, depending on how I structure, maybe borrowing 70-80% of that capacity year one. And then having to repay that loan back to make sure the policy continues to go in force every single year. Like, I just don't, I mean, I don't understand the concept, and maybe that's my own ignorance, but why would I just go to a bank, borrow my own money? And my money's still there and I can borrow 100%. They'll give you 100% of that because that money's there. It's collateralized. So, hey, boom, I got it. Here's my interest rate. I can take this money out now. It's still sitting in the bank and I can do something else with it. Is that a simplistic way to look at it? And I apologize if it is.
No, it's not. And I think I have another comment here. Well, not think, but I know another comment about the extent to which you really be full in this Infinite Banking idea for it to really work I'm not finding it.
No, take your time, man. Take your time.
I noticed I got all these little marks on my book here.
Yeah. Hey, I see you've done your research, man. That's
yeah.
Good.
And so for this to properly work, he says it's going to take 20, 25 years for the average person, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't find the quote, 20, 25 years of the average person to fully build out this structure, this banking system, and multiple policies. Insure as much as you can on yourself, insure as much as you can on everyone else you have an insurable interest in to make this work. So, I mean, again, to go full bore with how infinite banking is supposed to be done, vast majority of people don't have the willingness or ability or assets to make it work. Again, I'm not saying having a life insurance policy that you eventually borrow against is a bad idea. It could definitely make sense, but I think it's such a longer term play compared to a short funding need, like you said, borrowing from a bank. It's not an apples comparison because there's so many other things. Like life insurance is first and foremost life insurance. Secondarily, it could be a non-correlated asset you have access to through loans. So it's hard to definitively say if it's going to be better or worse for you or anyone else. In your scenario, you have 100 grand. You don't otherwise have a need for permanent life insurance. I don't know that I'd buy a policy just to eventually do this banking thing because, again, per NASH, you need lots of years and lots of policies and lots of consistency to really make this thing tick as it's supposed to.
Yeah, and then of course that brings in the buy term and invest the difference crowd, right? Oh, I can just go buy a huge term policy for a fraction of the price, and now I'll be able to invest my money, my $100,000. I can put my $100,000 in an investment account, and if I do that, I can borrow via margin rates
You
and get a
could,
margin loan, and then
or yeah, you can do that. Or the account grows well, you take money out, you're just living off growth. So like that could turn out to be the better outcome. Nothing's guaranteed in either of these scenarios, but
Hey, be careful with that word guaranteed now.
Notice I nothing's guaranteed.
Well, so Andy, I got a couple more questions for you, my friend, because I like to keep these short, but I also like to keep them entertaining, man. So, aside from the infinite banking, I know you have a face on the LinkedIn, and we talk about IULs, and I'm going to go there right now. What is your opinion around the product itself? Because I see you have a lot of like knowledge about the topic and that subject. You always posting about this IUL. Like, are you for, first of all, are you for or against them? I got confused.
I'm not anything about them. They're a product. I think they're not inherently bad. Some people will say they're bad. I don't think they're inherently bad. I think they're a lot riskier than a lot of people are aware or will let on. My view is you have if you want or need some form of permanent life insurance, you have whole life at one end of the spectrum. Not very glamorous, pretty stable.
It's
You know
boring.
what you're going to have to pay in. You more or less know what you're going to get out, or not guaranteed, but within a much more reasonably known bound of sort of what your interests or growth is going to be every year. The other end of the spectrum is variable universal life. Could be wildly good for you long term, or it could be wildly dangerous. It depends what you invest in within the policy, how the cost of insurance change over time, et cetera, any other fees that may be adjustable. That's going to have much more potential for growth and good things, but also much more potential for bad things, policy lapsing, policy not doing well. IUL sits somewhere in the middle of that spectrum, depending on who you ask. Some will say it's much closer to whole life than variable. Others will say somewhere. I don't know where it is. I just know it's somewhere in the middle. I know it is riskier and there's more levers the insurance company can pull and there's a lot more variability and flexibility, or flexibility is just sort of a way to tweak and repackage the word more risk, because the insurance company's putting some of the risk on you, the policyholder, hence making it more flexible. So it's somewhere in the middle. Now, I personally don't see a lot of use cases, and here's why. Like, if I'm going to go into permanent life insurance for the purposes of permanent death benefit and or secondarily the ability to tap it to borrow or whatever, I want to minimize the risks and unknowns. So this might just be me and my personal risk tolerance, but I'm going to lean towards whole life for doing that. I'm not touching variable universal life if I want to borrow against it, because anytime you borrow against anything, you're levering it up. And what does leverage do? It amplifies both the good and the bad. It increases the risk of something. So I'm not levering an already risky product. IUL somewhere in the middle. Could it turn out better than a whole life long term? Sure, of course it can. Could it turn out worse? Definitely, of course it can. So I'm like, I want to minimize the unknowns and just go whole life if I'm going this route. But that's me. So if people are fully aware of the potential outcomes, the uncertainties, the unknowns, and they feel they're willing and able to take the higher level of risk that mm-hmm. IUL has compared to whole life for whatever their reasons are for buying the policy, good for them. But I think so many people get this misrepresented to them by the people who sell it that they don't understand how risky it is. And that's my beef with it. So the product isn't bad. It's how it's used, how it's explained, how it's sold that makes the use cases inappropriate in many times, is my view.
Andy Ponko says the product's not bad. It's how it's used. It's how it's sold. It's how it's represented to the people. And I'm right there with him 100%. Like, I truly believe in my heart of hearts that majority of people who are selling these products truly don't understand how they actually work. And that's on most sides of the fence. I don't care if you're selling IUL, VUL, even whole life
insurance. LLUL.
LLUL, all those cases. So get yourself someone who is experienced in this game, because the last thing you want, in my humble opinion, is to have someone selling you something and you look at their experience and it says 1 month or 6 months or even 3 years. It takes a long time to actually understand these products, because most people have yet to see them actually go through fruition. They're only linked to, oh, these policies work. It's some old guy that's gray haired that's sitting at the at his cubicle. It's been there for 22 years, and you're wondering, why are you still in the same spot? Why are you not retired or doing something different? But that's their only link to something actually working. And in reality, most of the times, I'll tell you this, like, most people have yet to see these things work. They're relying on academia and math. It should work, and they just haven't seen it. But anyways, Mr. Ponko, tell me your last words for the group, my friend. This has been an honor and a privilege to have you on talking infinite banking. What do you want your last words of your last words of insight to be to the group?
Permanent life insurance is not bad, regardless of what people think. I think that's not my view. It is not a bad product. It's how it's used that could potentially make it bad for you and your circumstances. And it's so grossly misunderstood, many forms of it, especially IUL. So grossly missold in many cases, not everyone, but a lot of people. So you got to be really careful with it. Again, the product itself isn't bad. It's how it gets sold to you that might be bad. So buyer beware.
Buyer beware. Caveat emptor. Thank you guys for joining the Nine Innings Podcast. Andy, thank you for joining the show, my friend.
It's been fun. Thank you.
We had Andy Ponko from Tenon Financial. He was talking infinite banking, how it's not as bad as people make it out to be, but buyer beware, caveat emptor, it's easily misrepresented. It's easily misunderstood. It's easily abused by advisors who don't understand how policies work, whether it be whole life insurance, IULs, VULs, etc. But he's not for it. He's not against it. He just wants to educate people on the situation they're in. Thank you guys for joining the Nine Innings Podcast. Subscribe to the channel. Don't forget my book, MLB to CFP Live on Apple and Amazon. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at info@99capitalgroup.com. Send us your question. Go to the website at www.99capitalgroup.com. Schedule an appointment. As you know, we're here to do what? Educate, power, and engage, and also entertain. We had Andy Ponko on the call talking IUL, talking infinite banking, talking permanent life insurance. It's getting educated, my friend. Happy Thanksgiving. Stay humble, stay safe, my friends. I'll see you again soon.